I am a professor here at the University of Illinois Urbana in sociology and African American studies. And then I'm also an associate dean at the Carroll Illinois College of Medicine. My family is here in Champaign, but we're also from Chicago. Actually, my parents migrated from the South. I always kind of put that in my introduction, my father from Alabama and my mom from Mississippi. So there's a very Southern way about me, I'd like to think.
Did you envision this life for yourself when you were growing up in Chicago?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. I'm thinking back to my dreams. So it's interesting. I wanted to be a physician, actually, when I was younger. And so I ended up going into occupational therapy, which I loved. I loved that job. And now I'm really focusing a lot on healing, and healing is really important. So one of my professors talked about that no matter what someone wants to be, that they will do something similar to that. And like, it could be a different format than they imagined. So I guess in some ways, maybe I imagined myself as a healer.
You've conducted extensive research looking at mental and physical health of Black women. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So my research examines how gun violence affects Black mothers' mental and physical health. And so I do a lot of work on the South Side of Chicago. And we interviewed actually about 100 Black women. And one of the things that was really transformative. So when I started it, I was thinking about, okay, what policies do we need to change? How do we think about changing society so that it's just and equal and that they don't have to experience this? And then one of the moms, when I was doing the interview, she waited for me and she was like, can I just say, you know, thank you for coming to see about how we're doing, to ask us how we're doing, and then what we can do together. And then she said, the little things matter and people don't understand that. And, you know, her words kept going. I kept turning them in my head. The little things matter. You know, what is she saying? And then I took it as she was saying, thank you for recognizing our humanity, that we're in conditions that we should not be in. And then thinking how we can find solutions together. So that work really was transformative. It really is has influenced all of the work that you see me do now, from the wellness store to training community health workers, their children. Because the mothers often talked about how they tried to protect their children from the violence, and sometimes they couldn't. Even one of the moms talked about literally putting her body over her child's body as the bullets were flying. And so that work has been very sacred. It's been beautiful also because even as they struggle, there's a lot of strength, a lot of resiliency, a lot of joy. So it was just... just a wonderful experience. Yeah, and I'm grateful to all of them who shared their stories.
Congratulations, you were named the Poet Laureate for the city of Urbana. How did you find out?
I received an email, and I was telling someone, it's funny because the email, it's almost like, you know, the ones that you get, well, you know, thank you, there were so many, and you're like, oh, okay. But then at the end, it was like, and you were selected. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And so I was jumping and running through the house, just super excited. So that's how I found out.
I understand that you've brought some poetry to share with us, and one of them does relate to some of your work in the Chicago area.
Yes. So I'll start with the first one. And it's part of a documentary that we're doing called What's Left Behind. So when I did, me and my team, we talked to about 100 mothers. Some of them lost their children to gun violence. And so Lisa Butler, who was working with me at the time, she's a licensed clinical social worker now, she wanted to go deeper and to talk with mothers who did lose their children to understand after the funeral, after the media kind of packs up, what's left behind. And so that's the name of the documentary. That's what we're trying to explore. I write poems a lot of times when I'm very happy or very sad. And so this poem was just me trying to process the emotions that I was feeling, listening to one of the moms and many of them who talked about kind of some of the hard parts of kind of losing their child. So the title of the poem is The Hardest Part. The hardest part was to lower you into eternity as I remain mortal, to watch you slip away from me into the forever portal. My heart torn into strips of black and blue blood as part of it went with you. I cannot breathe, I cannot eat, because I am your mother without you. I carried you in my womb for 9 months, protecting you through the seasons. Now, I must select the vessel to carry you beyond my reach, beyond rhyme, beyond reason. Your journey is beneath my feet, beneath this ground, and into the realm of the ancestors. So now, where do I belong in this world? My soul aches and needs to sequester.
Thank you for sharing that. How long have you been writing poetry?
Oh my gosh, I have been writing. The earliest memory I have is like when I was in second grade and the teacher put my poem on the board, and I remember kind of sitting down and having to lift my head to see like my poem, and she was talking about it. And then in fourth grade, I wrote a poem about Dr. King.
What is it about poetry that is so, I guess, intimate? You know, it's not like writing a long story or a novel. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it even freaks people out. So they're like, how do I write a poem? Does it have to rhyme or whatever? But it doesn't have to.
Mm-mm. I think it's, for me especially, I think it's the emotions behind the poem, behind the even rhythm sometimes. And I think it's people trying to show you something, right? Trying to show you how they may feel about something, but without saying those words, right? I think people, poetry sometimes creates a picture. And I was saying in an earlier interview that I was on a train in New York, and I was watching this father with his daughter, and it was so beautiful. And I was trying to fit, and I was like, I was almost kind of like, oh, you know, you can't draw it, right? You don't have those skills. And I was like, okay, but wait, you're a poet, right? Like, you could write words. So I wrote to try to capture this beauty, this tenderness, that's all of that was there. So I think that's the gift, the power of poetry, as all arts, right? Like, and I think it goes, and sometimes beneath the level of the intellect, right? And kind of reaches people that way.
The story of generations of people who felt the lash of bondage, the shame of servitude, the sting of segregation, but who kept on striving and hoping and doing what needed to be done, so that today I wake up every morning in a house that was built by slaves.
We real cool, we left school, we lurk late, we strike straight, we sing sin, we thin gin, we jazz June, we die soon.
Those are the voices of former First Lady Michelle Obama and Gwendolyn Brooks, who won the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry in 1950. Both Chicago women inspired a poem by Ruby Mendenhall, the new poet laureate for the city of Urbana. She is also an associate dean at the Carl Illinois College of Medicine. Inspired by Obama, Brooks, and other Black women from Illinois, Mendenhall composed this poem.
And the poem is Michelle Obama and Black Women as Alchemists. Black women alchemists have special liberation elixirs made of golden threads and ties that bind, crushing the coils of the constrictor. Frances Watkins despised slave masters' oppressive and fearful alchemy as they transformed Black babies' blood into gold coins, greed from stolen wealth, drowning out their cries of agony. She demanded, "Bury me not in a land of slaves, where mothers shriek of wild despair and stand above tiny, child-sized graves." This alchemist challenged government with pen and poems, transforming chattel slavery into mercury-red abolitionist songs. The alchemy of Ida B. Wells Barnett, lynching statistics, awakened conscience to a copper-toned human principle that these blood-orange crops of strange fruit must be resisted. Gwendolyn Brooks' children were leastwise of the land, a frustrated alchemy of mode, design, and device, platinum jewels fighting to transform inside their mother's hand. Alchemy continues with Melvina in a slave's blouse, the First Lady's great-great-grandmother with cobalt blue dreams, transforming inhumane slave quarters into America's White House. She planted tomorrows full of hope and without trauma, allowing survival of generations and the acceptance of love from the future first Black president, Barack Hussein Obama. A First Lady with deep brown beauty, reflecting smiling eyes, a mind trained by masterful alchemists, leaving nothing wasted, transforming Black womanhood, dancing to Maya Angelou's Still I Rise. We stood up and ran to her health and wellness call of Let's Move, hearing What's Going On and other Marvin Gaye old school grooves. When the music stopped, a hidden America emerged on ABC. Her heart encased in sadness from children gone too soon, beautiful, young, lifeless bodies out of their mother's tortured reach. Michelle Obama said of children's blood that ran in the streets, Hadiya Pendleton was me and I was her. Death is warmed over too many times in this Chicago heat. She said, in this city, we are not in a zone of war yet. Our babies constantly face these hell hot flames. Even when asleep, stray bullets rock the cradle, opening death's door. She compelled the country to invest, saying resources matter. The price is all of our humanity if we settle for failure and cannot prevent the blood of children from splattering. The First Lady's audacious alchemy is an international stage and the ears of billions, admonishing the world to end gun violence and to embrace all of our neighborhoods and every last one of our children.
Thank you for sharing. You mentioned three Black women from Chicago who had connections to Chicago, Ida B. Wells, Gwendolyn Brooks, and of course, the First Lady Michelle Obama. Tell us about that.
Ida B. Wells, I think a lot about her boldness, right? Her audacity, her scientific mind. Right. When she was making the case that the narrative that we had around African-Americans and lynching was false, and then her crusade literally right to end it. So I'm always just amazed at that. And then also Gwendolyn Brooks, always when I read her poem, What Shall I Give My Children? Right. Even before I had children. Right. Like, what does that mean? Someone asking what can you give children who are seen as the least wise of the land, and they're fighting to be who they are, they're right fighting for their natural gifts to be able to flow, but they're constrained by racism and other things.
Ruby Mendenhall, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure. And thank you so much for your well wishes for me as Poet Laureate.